Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, April 14th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The Constitutional Court today dismissed an appeal for reinstatement by 21 MDC renewal team members who were kicked out of parliament after they were recalled by Morgan Tsvangirai's MDC for abandoning his party.
The Constitutional Court did not give reason why it dismissed our application. It said that the reasons will follow at a later stage. So at this point, we do not know the reasons why they dismissed that.
African Union Commission Chairperson Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma says xenophobic attacks in South Africa's port city of Durban, which is currently on lockdown, are being perpetrated mostly by criminals.
There are foreigners who have been attacked. They are not only Zimbabweans, but there are also local shop owners who are being attacked. Some of them are being asked to pay ransoms so that they can be spared from the attacks.
And Zimbabwe's move to suspend bonus payments for civil servants infuriates most local people. The Constitutional Court today dismissed an appeal for reinstatement by 21 MDC renewal team members who were kicked out of parliament after they were recalled by Morgan Tsvangirai's MDC for abandoning his party. In its ruling, the court found no fault on the action taken by Speaker of Parliament, Advocate Jacob Mudenda, and Senate President Edna Madzongwe in expelling them. President Robert Mugabe has already set June 10, 2015, as the date for by-elections in 14 of the 21 constituencies. MDC renewal team spokesman Jacob Mafume tells Studio 7 they went to court seeking justice, but what they got was injustice.
Yes, our application was dismissed by the Constitutional Court. The Constitutional Court did not give reasons why it dismissed our application. It said that the reasons will follow at a later stage. So at this point, we do not know the reasons why they dismissed. But it is clear from what we have been saying that if someone donates seats to ZANU-PF, ZANU-PF will accept those seats with the both hands. And that is what has happened in this case. We went to the court expecting justice. We want to say we did not get justice. What we got was injustice. And it's also another lesson that the people of Zimbabwe must learn, is that if you work with an oppressor, as in the cases has happened with our colleagues, Douglas Uonzora and Morgan Tsvangirai, the oppressor will do what he always does, that is to oppress people. Now, it is better for them, for psychology, Mazirisa to be in parliament than Solomon Madzela. This is what we are getting, and I don't think Zimbabwean people deserve this kind of leadership.
Were you surprised by this ruling?
We were not surprised. This is what we predicted ZANU-PF will do. As soon as the MDC put those things in motion, it has already held its primary elections. The system is controlled by ZANU-PF. The system is ZANU-PF. To expect the system to behave differently is to engage in bouts of insanity.
What are you going to do next as a party?
We are going to go back to the people. We are going to consult on how we move this process forward. The struggle begins now. We have been moved from parliament. We are going to go to the parliament of the street where everyone else is. We are going to refocus, remobilize, and look at people and say, what are the options that we have to engage and to bring about meaningful change in the country? And we are determined. We expected this. We are not surprised. We are actually invigorated to work harder for the change that we have always sought for the people of Zimbabwe.
That was MDC Renewal Team spokesman Jacob Mafume speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. Meanwhile, state media reports indicate that the clampdown on ZANU-PF officials alleged to be aligned to expel the former Vice President Joyce Mujuru continues, with the party now in the process of kicking out former Sports and Education Minister Enes Chigwedere and several others.
African Union Commission Chairperson Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma says xenophobic attacks in South Africa's port city of Durban, which is currently on lockdown, are being perpetrated mostly by criminals. In an interview with Studio 7 on the sidelines of a Women's Empowerment and Development Symposium at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C., Dlamini-Zuma said the attacks are affecting foreigners and South Africans. More than 17 foreigners and local people have so far been killed since last week. Her remarks come at a time when the South African government today imposed a dusk-to-dawn curfew in the city in an attempt to stop the violence in Durban. There are reports that similar violent activities, in which some people have been burnt alive, are expected to spread to other cities. The government has deployed three ministers to monitor and curb the situation.
In 2008, 62 foreigners were killed in xenophobic attacks targeting foreigners accused of grabbing local jobs at the expense of South Africans. King Goodwill Zwelithini allegedly sparked the latest violence after calling for the deportation of foreigners. The king now says he was misquoted, though his remarks were echoed by President Jacob Zuma's son, Edward, who claimed that foreigners have a potential of overthrowing the South African government in the near future. Malawi has already started evacuating its citizens from some politically volatile areas, including the southwestern townships or Soweto. Dlamini-Zuma tells Studio 7 Sindimiake Ngwakalele these xenophobic attacks are affecting all Africans.
I don't think it's a Zimbabwean issue. If you look at what has happened, yes, there are foreigners who have been attacked. They are not only Zimbabweans, but there are also local shop owners who are being attacked. Some of them are being asked to pay ransoms so that they can be spared from the attacks. So clearly, there is an element of that, but it's really also an element of criminality. And I think it's very important the government to look at what are the issues, but it's also important to root out the criminal element.
One of the issues is about Zimbabweans, or I ask Zimbabweans specifically, they're saying that they would rather face the xenophobic attacks in South Africa before they go back to their own home. Is South Africa still engaged in trying to bring peace to Zimbabwe, especially when you look at the fact that there's the disappearance of a journalist and activist, Itai Dzamara, and they still claims of no political space by the opposition?
Well, I think that the Zimbabweans must also address this issue themselves, because in the last election, there was ample space for opposition. And of course, they didn't do well. And if there are issues of security, obviously, they must be discussed. They have not reported this to the AU. So as the AU, we are not dealing with it.
That was African Union Commission Chairperson Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma speaking with Studio 7 Sindimiake Ngwakalele from Washington, D.C., USA.
Meanwhile, some South African government officials are blaming so-called thugs for taking advantage of the xenophobic attacks to carry out criminal activities. However, independent political analyst Mlamuli Nkomo tells Studio 7 the violence is stemming from lack of jobs, fueled by the failure of the African National Congress government to establish a reasonable social safety net.
Maybe we have to view this violence in a context that in South Africa we are dealing with a society where violence is entrenched. From the day-to-day street robberies, from the apartheid past and the responses to apartheid, through various forms, what we can see is that violence is actually part and parcel of this society. But now what we are seeing is maybe anger and competition over resources, competition over jobs, and maybe generally envy and jealousy that foreigners seem to be maybe prospering or doing better than the locals.
But Mr. Nkomo, such situations obtain throughout the world where you have foreigners coming to the country, you know, and so forth. But why go to the extent of burning people alive?
Yes, the issue of burning people alive is very, very extreme. In other countries, I mean, illegal foreigners are deported. They are also being deported from South Africa. But as I have said, the history of apartheid or liberation struggles, or even the history before that, we are living in a society whereby violence seems to be celebrated.
And that was independent political analyst Mlamuli Nkomo speaking on the line with Studio 7 from Johannesburg, South Africa.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930-5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
a closer look at Zimbabwe's move to suspend bonus payments for civil servants.
And Zimbabwe's born freeze speak out about the country's independence. Stay tuned for more details.
But first, we take a look at regional and international news.
Nigeria's president-elect Muhammadu Buhari says he cannot promise that authorities will find the 219 schoolgirls kidnapped a year ago by Boko Haram militants in the northeastern village of Chibok. Mr. Buhari has criticized the current government's efforts to find the girls, saying his administration will act differently from President Goodluck Jonathan's government.
Amnesty International says the militants have abducted at least 2,000 women in Nigeria since the start of 2014 and forced many of them into sexual slavery and armed combat. To commemorate the day, the Voice of America's Africa Division today held a symposium titled Chibok Girls Not Forgotten. One of the speakers at the symposium was U.S. Congresswoman Frederica Wilson, representing Florida's 24th District.
Boko Haram has slaughtered thousands of civilians and perpetrated unspeakable horrors. They are physically and psychologically abusing children, forcing them to get married, forcing religious conversions, and have resorted to using women and girls as human bombs and using children as human shields. And the nightmare scenario of Boko Haram forges alliances with other terrorist organizations, namely ISIS, who they have been calling out to. And ISIS has responded. The marriage of Boko Haram and ISIS is a marriage made in hell, and we have to stay on the case.
That was U.S. Congresswoman Frederica Wilson representing Florida's 24th District.
Percy Sledge, the rhythm and blues singer whose rendition of When a Man Loves a Woman topped the charts in 1966, died today at the age of 73. According to Reuters news agents, no further details were given about his death.
Somali militant group Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for today's bombing and assault of a government complex in the capital, Mogadishu.
International Monetary Fund experts say the global economy will expand 3.5% this year, a very slight increase over last year's growth.
And Iraqi Prime Minister Adel al-Abadi is in Washington today, set to make his case to President Barack Obama for a marked increase in U.S. military aid to fight Islamic State militants.
Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa yesterday announced that the cash-strapped and bloated government has suspended bonus payments for civil servants in an attempt to reduce its recurrent expenditure. But the move has been condemned by the Opposition Movement for Democratic Change, the National Constitutional Assembly, and the Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe. Chinamasa said they took this bold step in order to reduce the wage bill, which is taking no less than 82% of the budget. He said in 2014, the government bonus bill stood at $172.6 million, the major chunk of which had to be paid in the first quarter of 2015.
The government has been channeling almost 82% of the budget towards salaries, with monthly employment costs amounting to $260 million. Civil servants' bonuses will be scrapped in 2015 and 2016, and the situation will be reviewed in 2017. For years, the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank have been urging Harare to slash its wage bill. To discuss the bonus fallout, Studio 7's Blessing Zulu spoke with President of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, Dr. Takabafira Joe, and President of the Employers Confederation of Zimbabwe, John Mufukari. Blessing first asked Mufukari about his take on Chinamasa's move to scrape bonus payments.
I think there is definitely a strong dose of reality setting in government now. Private sector hasn't been able to pay bonuses for the past 3 years, and we were marveling at one employer who seemed completely immune to all these other things that were happening to other employers and kept on increasing salaries and paying bonuses all this time.
Dr. Joe, your response?
In our view, the decision is as unfortunate as it is ill-conceived, because we believe that it's justifying inefficiency and that it is not the best way to promote industrial harmony, that the government unilaterally, without consulting its employees, unilaterally just declares it's a militaristic approach of command and control and would not really motivate workers to work hard.
But Mr. Fugari, is this not going to backfire? Because those bonuses are actually used by employees to stimulate the economy. So if the employees do not have that buying power, is this not going to have a negative impact on the economy?
Yes, it will. Most decidedly it will. But we are looking here at the realities of the situation. You cannot borrow money to pay bonuses so that you can then stimulate industries. That is the wrong way of going about it. The employer doesn't have the money, and therefore the employer is simply facing the reality that they have totally run out of fiscal space now, and they are saying, we will now have to do without bonus. In my opinion, I entirely agree with the minister when he says the only other alternative would have been to pay that bonus through borrowing and then you have to tax people even more to pay back that borrowing. And that, to me, would have done even more harm than simply not paying bonus in the first place.
Dr. Joe, your response, the employer is having a reality check. Do you agree?
I don't agree, because there are several possible ways of raising revenue in the government. And I think Mr. Mfukari could be speaking on behalf of the industry, but there are differences with the government. I can give examples like our minerals. There is lack of transparency, accountability, and equity in terms of boundless resources that we have. We have also ministries, like in the Ministry of Education, we have four ministries that could collapse into one ministry. There is no need to have a Minister of Primary and Secondary Education, Sports, Psychomotor, Higher and Tertiary. This could be simply one ministry with four departments. We have also districts that have four MPs. That could be simply be collapsed into one constituency.
Mr. Mfukari, is the government bloated?
I am very sympathetic to the sentiments Dr. Joe is expressing. I think it was unfortunate that there wasn't a discussion about this beforehand. But as he quite rightly said, I'm speaking on behalf of employers who have found it impossible to pay bonuses for the past 3 years. And I must say, in our case as the private sector, we have been discussing with our workers, and the workers know why there has not been any bonus for the past 3 years. As I am speaking to you now, there are a lot of companies who still haven't paid much salaries. but the workers know exactly what is happening and they understand.
That was President of the Employers' Confederation of Zimbabwe, John Mufukari, on the line from Harare. You also heard from Dr. Takabafira Joe, President of the Employers' Confederation of Zimbabwe. They were speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Masvingo.
Some Zimbabweans who were born after the country attained independence say there is no reason to celebrate on April 18th as they are currently struggling to make ends meet. But those that are in the ruling ZANU-PF party believe that Zimbabwe has a lot to offer the young generation through the controversial Black Economic Empowerment Program and land reforms. Our correspondent Taura Ishava has more details from the Midlands provincial capital, Gweru.
Esna Truzara was born in 1981, a year after the Zimbabwe African People's Union, then led by Joshua Nkomo and Robert Mugabe's Zimbabwe African National Union, liberated the country from British colonial rule. Ruzara, who earns a living through selling an assortment of goods at Gweru's Mkoba 6 shopping center and is among Zimbabweans commonly referred to as born frees, says it will be business as usual on Independence Day.
Zuva reIndependence iri ndinorikoshesawo zvangu asi nyenge ndiri pabasa kuti ndopanondiraramisawo nokuraramisa mhuri yangu.
Yes, I'm aware of the importance of Independence Day and it is also significant to me. But I'll be at work on that day because I'm self-employed and I can't take a break from work. I will commemorate Independence Day, but I will be at work.
Another vendor, 35-year-old Judith Ndlovu, will be joining Ruzara at the same flea market where she also sells goods such as blankets, jackets, and similar wares. Ndlovu says ordinary Zimbabweans and the country's leaders should use Zimbabwe's Independence Day commemorations to resolve issues bedeviling the country. 32-year-old women's rights activist Vimbai Chajga, who is also a born free, agrees. She argues that it is not surprising that most people, especially young women, can no longer find time to commemorate Independence Day as they have to contend with putting food on the table.
Most women our age are family women and their husbands. It's either they are out of the country or they are out of jobs because of the way the situation is in Zimbabwe. So they are taking this day to be a day where they can work. If they are like vendors, if they are women who sell what we call mabero, they are taking this day to be a day where they can make more money for their families instead of commemorating, remembering it. Yes, they know it is Independence Day, but it is more of a working day.
Brian Dube, a lawyer and national spokesperson of the youth wing of the Movement for Democratic Change led by Morgan Tsvangirai, shares the same views. He says Independence Day commemorations are a big fuss for most youths.
I cannot say there is any born free in Zimbabwe as we speak, because we are now all in the new colonial setup, but we are being oppressed by our very own people. So what I can tell you is that, yes, indeed, 18th of April marks a very important day, but it has lost its meaning as a result of the behavior of the current people in leadership.
Dube says he disagrees with the view that Zimbabwe's young generation lacks the capacity to lead in resolving the country's problems. He says youths are upright and patriotic citizens, with many of them having brilliant ideas that can take the country forward. Dube blames the country's leadership, which he says has frustrated youths through bad governance. Youthful Development, Peace and Conflict Management lecturer at the Zimbabwe Open University, Didmus Dewa, speaking as an independent political analyst, says Zimbabweans must be grateful that young people have over the years remained resilient and peaceful under challenging times.
When you look at them, we should actually commend our youths that they are not in the streets fighting the government. Otherwise, if it were in other countries, we could have been witnessing a war that would have been started by the youths.
But Josman Mangisi, who is a public relations officer in the Zimbabwe Miners Federation and a ZANU-PF supporter, says instead of mourning about lack of job opportunities, young people should take advantage of land reforms and the country's indigenization program in order to venture into business.
youth, they must not be crybabies. Currently, we've seen that people who have rushed to the mining sector, especially in the small-scale mining sector, it is because of economic hardships to earn a living. And they are doing well. Now I'm challenging those guys who say they are geologists, they are engineers, they are surveyors, to join forces, to come to us or to go to government, the Minister of Mines, that no, we have got these skills. Or to go to those who are already on the ground, that we have got these skills. Let's work together.
Some Bonfrees claim that these programs are only tailor-made for supporters of President Mugabe's ruling ZANU-PF party and not all 8 million Zimbabwean youths. For as long as the country's economic problems persist and most youths have no jobs or better opportunities from which to earn a living, independence will remain of little meaning to them and other ordinary Zimbabweans. Reporting for Studio 7 from Gweru, this is Taurai Shawa.
And in sports news, Zimbabwe's young warriors have made history as the mighty warriors failed to deliver in an international tournament. Reporter Michael Kariati has more details.
The young warriors have made history by qualifying for the 2015 All-Africa Games to be held in Congo Brazzaville in September after holding Cameroon's Cubs 1-1 to sail through to the finals 2-1 on aggregate. The young warriors won 1-0 at Rufaro Stadium in the first leg, and nobody, including their hardest of followers, gave them a chance in the return leg in Yaounde, where Cameroonian national soccer team have proved invincible. But Calixto Pasua's team at the weekend proved all critics wrong and brought some smiles on the faces of Zimbabwean football followers, who are used more to failure than to success. Pasua's side becomes only the second Zimbabwean team in history after Reinhard Fabisch classified of 1991 to qualify for Africa's biggest sporting competition. While the young warriors are celebrating their qualification, the same cannot be said of the mighty warriors who are down and out of the same competition. The mighty warriors needed just a 1-0 winning margin to sail through to the finals, but that could not be, as they were held a 2-0 draw at home by Ghana's Black Queens to bow out 4-3 on aggregate. The mighty warriors lost the first leg 2-1 at the Accra National Sports Stadium, and coach Rosemary Mugaza is disappointed with the final outcome.
We considered two silly goals, which we shouldn't have considered, but I think there's a lot of work that we need to do.
The mighty warriors now turn their attention to the 2016 Olympic Games qualifiers, and Mugaza says there is need for a total overhaul of the team, especially in the striking force.
It needs to improve with the whole departments, as you know that the league has been not very active, especially our goalkeeping department as well as the strike force.
In goal, South Africa's Jim Bemister maintained the South African dominance of the Golden Pilsner Zimbabwe Open after taking a 15-under-par 272 for the title. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Kariati.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts of the Youth Connection will be talking with listeners and experts about the views of the young generation on Zimbabwe's independence.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you right back from our studios.
And now to recap today's top stories.
The Constitutional Court today dismissed an appeal for reinstatement by 21 MDC renewal team members who were kicked out of parliament after they were recalled by Morgan Tsvangirai's MDC for abandoning his party.
African Union Commission Chairperson Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma says xenophobic attacks in South Africa's port city of Durban, which is currently on lockdown, are being perpetrated mostly by criminals.
And Zimbabwe's move to suspend bonus payments for civil servants infuriates most workers.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night, Zimbabwe.